Welcome to Navigating Cancer Together. My name is Talaya Dindi. I'm a cancer thriver, cancer doula, independent patient advocate, and owner of On the Other Side. I use my experience to help others get on the other side of cancer. Gaps between the guidance, emotional support, and education that are needed, and what one receives can be huge. This podcast fills those gaps by sharing stories, resources, and information about all things related to cancer and wellness. I interview guests from all walks of life who are living with cancer, caregivers, and those who are thriving on the other side. Also, I talk with organizations, healthcare professionals, and experts in the health and wellness spaces who offer complementary and integrative care. Join me. We are in this together. Hello, everyone. This is Talaya from OnTheOtherSide.life, and you're listening to Navigating Cancer Together, the show that has something for everyone facing cancer. Why? Because everyone is different with different needs, beliefs, and perspectives. Thank you for joining us for this episode. I encourage you to open your minds and your hearts. Today, our very special guest is Keisha Hixon. Keisha Hixon is a dynamic speaker and thought leader. She brings 25 years of financial expertise and a passion for resilience and women's empowerment. Keisha was diagnosed with multiple myeloma. She transformed this challenge into an opportunity for growth and advocating for living life on her own terms. Keisha's entrepreneurial spirit shines through her successful ventures, which includes a children's salon, a wellness brand, and luxury gifting business. Throughout her personal and professional journey, she has shown resilience and positive outlook. She inspires audience to embrace change, overcome adversity, and redefine their narratives. Keisha's message is one of hope, empowerment, and living purposefully, encouraging others to pursue their goals with determination. Before I bring Keisha on, I want to touch on multiple myeloma. Multiple myeloma, for those who are not aware, is a cancer of plasma cells. I must share this important statistic. According to the International Myeloma Foundation, in the U.S., Black and African Americans are about 14% of the country's population. But unfortunately, they constitute about 20% of all multiple myeloma patients, and that incidence is growing. 1 in 5 patients diagnosed with multiple myeloma in the U.S. is African American, and by 2034, that number will grow to 1 in 4. Although the genetic mutations that cause myeloma are acquired and not inherited, family history is a known risk factor for multiple myeloma. First-degree relatives of people with multiple myeloma have a 2 to 3 times higher risk of developing the disease. Keisha, I must thank you so much for joining us today. I'm honored to have you and welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's really a pleasure to be on your show today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Keisha, before we dive into your story, your background, tell us, how are you feeling today?
Actually, I'm feeling pretty good today. I can't complain. I actually had a telemedicine call before this podcast recording. I know I deal with multiple myeloma, which is a critical illness that you just went over some statistics. It's constant being monitoring. So me fitting in my medical appointments with my everyday life has become part of the fabric of who I am, right? So I go to the doctor sometimes every week or every 2 weeks. But I'm happy to report that I feel great. And the latest myeloma markers that were taken on Monday show the disease is still stable.
Congratulations. That is wonderful news. I'm always happy to hear that. I'm curious, Keisha, how much did you know about multiple myeloma before your diagnosis?
Zero. I never even heard of it. The day I was actually diagnosed and the doctor called and told me multiple myeloma, I was like, okay, what could that possibly be? Because it doesn't say cancer in the title. It didn't say breast cancer, colon cancer. So I was actually at my office. I was at work and the call came in and he said, Keisha, I need to talk to you. He goes, you have time? I said, sure. And he said, I have to tell you, I'm very sorry. you have multiple myeloma. I was like, okay. So I turned to my computer, holding the phone, and I typed it in, and what popped up, I just went blank. Because it does say incurable cancer of the plasma cells. You know, they kind of like paraphrase it, dot, 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 3 to 5 years life expectancy. I just froze. I just absolutely froze. I was 38 years old. I was in great health. I did not imagine that's what he would have said to me at all. Never heard of it.
Wow, that's unfortunate that he didn't come right out and say, oh, it's a form of cancer. You just happened to look it up and see that, oh, this is a type of cancer.
He said it, and I immediately just turned to my computer and just started to type it in. So I was at my office. I was working that day. So he just wanted to tell me what the blood work, this is just the blood work that they determined that this is what it was. And then came the, we have to take a PET scan, and now we're going to take a biopsy to determine what type of myeloma. But the blood work showed him that it was multiple myeloma based upon the myeloma markers. Because they had an idea of what it possibly could be, and they started ruling things out. And that's never heard of it. Never.
Keisha, what symptoms were you experiencing? What prompted you to go to the doctor?
Honestly, I didn't have any symptoms. I had a fall at home on Martin Luther King weekend. It was Sunday. I was off from work that Monday. I fell in the kitchen and I hit my elbow. I just kind of like slipped on some water because it was like snowing. The weather was about to change. So when I came home, I took my shoes off and I had on my slip my socks. So I kind of just slipped. So I allowed myself to fall so I don't get hurt. And I hit my elbow on the tile. And the pain was excruciating. Oh my God. I didn't even fall that hard. I was like, oh. So Sunday progressed into Monday. I couldn't really do anything with the arm, but I didn't think it was broken. But I couldn't do certain motions. So I was like, oh, let me go to the urgent care. So I went to the urgent care on Monday. The doctor on call, she said, you're pretty young, you're in good health. She goes, it's really difficult for somebody that young to break their arm where it is. She goes, anyway, I'm gonna take an X-ray to be on the safe side. The panic on this doctor's face when she came back after the X-ray, I was like, calm down. She was like, you have to go see an orthopedic doctor immediately. Okay. So she found one for me. And I went the next day, which was Martin Luther King Day, the Monday. And I went to him and he said, oh, it could be two things, but I'm gonna send you for MRI. And that's where it started.
So a fall.
A fall. I mean, like fatigue, a little bit of night sweats, but I work a lot. So you just kind of brush it off that you're tired. But I didn't have like severe weight loss of appetite. Nothing out the ordinary. I was a typical woman in corporate America raising a family on the go from 6 in the morning to 8 at night. That was my life back and forth. So I just thought that I was just tired and I had minimal bone pain in my calf and my shin. I just thought it was exercise, whatever. It's just aches and pains, but nothing significant enough for me to deem to go seek any type of testing. Even though I went to the doctor every 6 months, I went to the doctor for a regular checkup. Nothing prompted me to feel like I should have gone to the doctor. And then when the biopsy came back, 70% of my blood was already cancerous. 70% was already cancerous at that time. That was January 2016.
Keisha, what was one of the first things that you did once everything kind of set in your mind? What was the first course of action that you took?
I remember that was January. I took off from work. I took 3 months off because they decided to do radiation on my arm because, of course, the cancer was in my bone and my elbow. So they felt like it was safe to do radiation and start what's called the induction treatment, which is the chemotherapy for the disease. I don't know. I just remember saying that this can't be it. This really can't be it. My daughter was 8 years old at the time. I was 38. I was like, oh, this can't be it. And I just went into like this fight mode, like. I couldn't give up. Like, I don't remember anything else besides I have to beat this. And I immersed myself in information. I joined every blog, Facebook group, read every clinical trial, because from 2016 to now, about 7 to 8 drugs have been approved.
Wonderful.
And the TCAR therapy is now approved as treatment. When I was diagnosed, the TCAR therapy was in clinical trials. I just immersed myself in information. I would read all night. I remember there was weeks I wouldn't sleep. I would just read, and then you live by these markers. Like every 2 weeks you go to the doctor, are you responding to the drug? Like you just constantly think about, are you responding? And that's all I really remember, just like I have to live. But it also sparked something in me, like I just could not give up. And then I started, I opened up several businesses after that because I felt like, who's gonna be my legacy? At that point, I worked for my company for 21 years. And I felt like this can't be it. Everything I thought I was gonna do when I retired, I was like, oh, I gotta speed it up now. Because if it was true that I was gonna pass away in 3 to 5 years, it just couldn't be all I did. I worked for this financial institution for 22, 24 years. It had to be something more. Like, what else are you going to say about me? That's it?
I
I have an
understand.
8-year-old daughter, and this is going to be my claim to fame. And it just really just sparked something in me. Like, even though multiple myeloma is incurable, I always see the brighter side of things. There's worse cancers to have right now. Right. Also, coming off of COVID. So many healthy people are no longer with us. They have long COVID, so many side effects just from that. And I have incurable cancer. So I'm just grateful. I just try to see the brighter side of things. I've always had, because you have to, so you'll defeat yourself
That's right.
and you
That's
won't
so
move
true.
forward. And then you're not productive, and nobody wants that.
That's right. You kind of get stuck in this woe is me mindset, and that's not where you want to be. I'm interested, Keisha, in knowing how did you share the news with your family?
So I told them, right? So I'm a very straightforward person. So when it happened, I just called my mother. I was like, listen, I have cancer. Stop crying. Because my mother immediately goes to the C word is a scary word.
Yes, it
The one thing
is.
I've learned through this whole journey, it's hard for me to manage my emotions and other people's emotions. Right? It's really so. I kind of deal with things like a little differently than most people do, to be honest. So I told my mom, she was devastated, of course. She just like she was she had a hard time dealing with it. But I was still going to treatment. 3 months later, I went back to work. I was just living. My family is very small, so I told them. I told all of them and my close friends. Of course, they were very concerned, like, to hear the C word and it's incurable. Kind of had everybody on edge. Everybody on edge. For the most part, everybody's been very supportive. But because when you think about cancer and the treatment, you expect the person to look a certain way. Right. So, because all the things you see on TV, but the chemotherapy for multiple myeloma, you really don't lose your hair. I'm able to function. I'm sick a lot. Like, of course, I have an upset stomach. I'm suffering from foggy brain. Just years of being on chemo on that toxin is now starting to take its toll on me, but it's not what people would think I should look like as a cancer patient. So I think that kind of like softens the blow for them. They forget. They just forget. And so I mentioned I have to go to the doctor or I don't feel well. And then all of a sudden everybody remembers. But it was a difficult time. It was a difficult time.
You raised a very interesting and true point. It's like if you don't look a certain way, what the ideal cancer patient looks like, it does soften the blow. But on the other hand, in my experience, it also raised the expectation like, well, you don't look sick, so why are you laying around, or why is it that you don't feel good? If I was to go into work, well, you look good. And it's like, I don't feel good though.
Right.
And so then there's not that matched expectation of what you are supposed to look like and how you're feeling. So, yes, it's a double-edged sword, I think.
It is. It really is. It's great to almost look like yourself, but many days you don't feel well on the inside. You
That's
don't.
right.
Like, the amount of toxicity that comes to treating certain diseases, how your body responds, your liver, your kidneys, your heart, is a lot that's happening internally, right? For your body to heal itself and also metabolize the drugs that you're constantly taking. And you're getting older. So other things are just happening by the natural
Right.
way of things, it can be definitely be challenging at times, for sure.
Absolutely. It is not easy and it's not for the faint of heart. I do want to ask you, Keisha, besides navigating life with resilience and positivity, how are you navigating it with an incurable disease in addition to being positive and resilient? What has helped you and what have you learned along the way?
Along the way, I definitely learned that don't worry about things you can't control. That's number one. And I had a reminder of that this time last year. So, which we didn't touch on, as a myeloma patient, every year you have to have a biopsy and a PET scan just to see, make sure the disease is not progressing where you are. You're also susceptible to a secondary cancer that nobody speaks about because you're always on chemo, and that puts you at risk for other cancers. So last January, I took a biopsy and PET scan. It's the first time in 7 years that they said that I can possibly come in out of remission. So I've been on the same drug for 7 years. Since 2016, I've been on the same drug, which is rare in the multiple myeloma world, right?
Because they
Typically,
change a lot.
change. And there are better drugs on the market now than when I was diagnosed. So that January, it came back that I may be going the opposite way. I tell you, this paralyzed me for like 4 months. I did the bare minimum because you don't know if you're going to respond to the next drug
That's
or
right.
am I going to be able to live the same way because of the side effects from the next drug. So anyway, June, I retook the biopsy. They went back the other way. So I'm still in remission, yes. So it still shows that I have less than 5% cancer cells in my blood. So that was also a reminder of don't worry about things you can't control, right? I've learned that you have to listen to the science. Everybody has an opinion. Nobody really is an oncologist, right? And multiple myeloma is a very specialty cancer. Between the hematologist and the oncologist, you have to seek medical attention with a team that you are comfortable with, which is key. And every time I speak about multiple myeloma and any other cancer groups, you have to be able to trust your medical team and be able to communicate with them effectively. Everybody has different styles. You have to find the team that works for you. In the past few years, I've decided to share my story as part of an inspirational story of we all get kind of stuck in this comfort zone, status quo, complacency. And my wake-up call was that phone call I received, that death sentence. Like we constantly put things off and we constantly waiting for time to pass. Oh, I'm gonna wait till I retire. I'm gonna wait till my daughter graduates from high school. I'm gonna wait for this, I'm gonna wait for that. But sometimes we don't get to that point that we think 10 years down the line. So now most of my time is spent speaking to organizations and corporations and women's groups. So like, do not wait until something critical happens before you live that thing you want to do. And that means different things for all of us, right?
That's
It
right.
can be learning a second language. It can be writing a book, turning your hobby into business, or just going for that promotion. It doesn't have to be like, you want to be a millionaire or start a new company. Just all the things that will make you happy and attribute to your legacy, you need to start to do it because you
I
may
love
run
that.
out of time. Yeah. So that's what I've learned from that situation.
I
And
love that
also,
outlook.
thank you. It also forced me to see like how I'm complacent in other parts of my life, right? I think we always think about complacency in the workplace. Like, oh, I've been in the same position for 10 years. We always seem to see it from a financial standpoint, but not from a health standpoint or a friend standpoint, or even raising your children. Because sometimes we become very complacent raising our children as well. We just kind of go along with like the status quo. Oh, they're going to school. They're going from grade to grade. We have activities and everything is just comfortable. You just kind of like settle in, right? And you kind of lose sight of some of the dreams you had when you were 20 years old. So those are the things that I've learned managing a critical illness.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing. I think that's very helpful for people to just kind of redirect how they look at things, how they look at their life and their worldview. Very important. You touched on feeling comfortable with your healthcare team, your medical team, your oncologist. What were some key characteristics that helped you to feel comfortable with your healthcare team? What do they display that made you say, okay, these are my people?
So when I originally got diagnosed, I started my treatment at a hospital called Cornell, Weill Cornell, because that hospital was affiliated with my hematologist, who has been my doctor since 2006. But because I understood with the disease when I went through the initial treatment and I was initially in what they call remission, and they sulfured my stem cells because that's something they do right after they get the disease under control. They take you to collect your stem cells because the next step of treatment is you go for a stem cell transplant. So I went through that process with a doctor at Cornell, and he says to me, okay, now we're just gonna wait and see. I was like, wait and see? What does that mean? Right? So I was like, oh, this doctor's not for me because I need somebody that's on it. Like, wait and see. So I left Cornell and I went to Sloan Kettering in New York, right? That's where I'm from. So the first doctor I had, she was really, really good, right? She was really good. She convinced me to have the stem cell transplant because I wasn't going to do it initially. I was just going to wait it out because it's not a cure, right? The stem cell transplant just kind of like brings the disease to the most minimal level. They try to just kill as many cells as they can to slow down the process of them reproducing. I meet with this doctor and she says to me, if you're my sister, you will be having the transplant. And I was like, okay. So she convinced me. And then next January 2017, I had the transplant. That medical team at Sloan has been so accommodating is not the word, but they've been accommodating because sometimes I would call with a lot of questions. They never made me feel like what I was feeling was too big or too small. They answer all my questions. They understand me because for my disease, I go to the doctor a lot. Initially, I used to go to the doctor every week, sometimes twice a week. So you have to feel good. It become like part of your family. Like when I go and something is wrong, I kind of feel like, are you okay? And they'll share their stories with me as well. The original doctor moved on. She moved on to research. And now I have a new doctor, Dr. Holkratz. And she's great. I love the fact I look for a doctor who also is involved in clinical trials, who is kind of want to be on the cutting edge of new cures and think that's the kind of doctor I like, who's always going to know because the medicine is ever changing. So I look for someone who understands my personality. I don't need to be overly baby. Like I'm not that type. Just tell me what it is and we're going to move forward. So I'm pretty comfortable with the medical team I have at Sloan Kettering. Very comfortable. But to say the doctor at Cornell, he didn't really say anything wrong. I just didn't realize my disease is kind of a wait and see type of thing,
Yes,
right?
I understood that.
But he
Yes.
didn't plan to be that way. He was like, wait and see. I was like, wait and see. I was like, oh no, because I'm an educated patient. And I also urge any patient I come across, you have to know your disease, understand it, ask questions, write your questions down, record them, have somebody come with you. So you have a clear understanding of your medical prognosis and how you should be proceeding. Because if that doctor leaves or your medical plan changes and you no longer can go to this doctor, you have to be able to articulate what's happening to another doctor to make sure you guys are on the same page. Because doctors are human,
That's right.
make mistakes. Sometimes they overlook certain things. You have to be able to have an educated conversation with your doctor.
Thank you for sharing that, Keisha. We are on the same page. I love how you talk about this. It's so important. You have to be the educated patient, you have to be your own best advocate. Wonderful advice. I want to talk about clinical trials. We touched on it a few times, very lightly, but let's dig into clinical trials a little bit more. I want to know, Keisha, how did clinical trials play a part in your cancer journey? And what advice do you have for people who are on the fence about even considering clinical trials, particularly people in the Black and African American communities?
So clinical trials, because my cancer is incurable, and when I was diagnosed, I just always had to figure out if I become what they call refractory or no longer, this treatment is no longer working, how would I become eligible for a clinical trial if I had to look to go that route? So I did a lot of research on the different phases of clinical trials. I'm telling you, I'm almost a doctor in multiple myeloma.
Dr.
Of clinical trials.
Keisha.
Clinical trials, who is eligible for clinical trials? what they look for in certain patients. So I kind of understand that process all the way through because I felt like I had to know if I had to go a clinical route to a way, how would I make that decision? How do I feel about clinical trials? I feel like if you're at the end of your disease or you ran out of treatment options or your disease is that rare and a clinical trial is available, I would encourage the person to try it. One, we don't know if it's going to help you. Hopefully it will, because there are different parameters that they know is going to help the patient or not. It's just not like, okay, sign up for a clinical trial. There are protocols in place to see if even where you are in your disease, if you are eligible to go into the clinical trial. But most people don't really realize that. If you are able to participate in a clinical trial, I would encourage you to do so because one, it can help you. And if it doesn't, unfortunately, it may be the data collected could help someone else being able to eradicate that disease. All right. So I'm all for clinical trials. I'm all for medical advancements. We've seen it over the past 20 years, how medicine has changed, even how we do surgical procedures. It's just the evolution of the medical world. And you have to be a part of it. That's how I feel about it. And the African American community, that's another question you asked me.
Yes.
So I think a lot has to do with education, right? A lot of miseducation, a lot of things that may have happened in the past, why individuals in the African American community are less likely to want to sign up for a clinical trial. But also what I really want to point out, African Americans are the least candidates who get into clinical trials. And I think something needs to be said about that and something needs to be done about that. Even in the multiple myeloma world, even though this disease mostly affects Black males over 68, they make up a very small percentage of patients that go into multiple myeloma clinical trials. So I think that needs to be looked at as a whole, right? If the disease affects 15% Blacks, 80% whites, 20% Latinas, that should encompass the clinical trials.
Right.
Right. So that is something in March, I am launching Multiple Myeloma Matters that I would like to bring some awareness to just multiple myeloma as a whole. Like in October, breast cancer gets the most awareness. It
Yeah.
is the most common cancer. Listen, and I appreciate it. A lot of my friends have
I
breast
do
cancer.
too.
One of my great friends, she has a nonprofit called AfroPink. I help her all through the year in October. What prompted me to do the nonprofit Multiple Myeloma Matters during her huge event last October, she has a mammogram truck, and I was in the truck to get a mammogram. And I'm giving my history, or I have multiple myeloma. All of a sudden, the driver of the truck comes to sit next to me. I was like, hi. So he was like, you have multiple myeloma. He's whispering. You have multiple myeloma? I said, yes. He said, so do I. He doesn't want his coworkers to know. So in that moment, I realized that it's not that rare. And because I do talk about it, some on social media, people have been DMing me, oh, my mom was diagnosed, or my cousin, or I have it. At the end of last year, I have a lot of contacts who just contacted me randomly of people they know or they're diagnosed. And I decided that I'm going to start Multiple Myeloma Matters. So that's scheduled to launch this March as well.
Wonderful.
Just from a support standpoint, support, education, and advocacy, all right? Especially the support part of it, because we are living longer with multiple myeloma. But the anxiety that still lives within us, are we going to come out of remission, is still there as a real thing. And because we don't look like we're sick, we just don't get the support that sometimes we need. And I do believe that your friends and family want to sympathize with you, but it's something to be said to have a group or someone you can talk to who has the disease or has a similar disease, because they kind of understand what it's like to constantly be going to treatment and being probed and called. And if I don't feel well, you really can't ignore anything that goes on in your body when you're battling a
That's
critical
right.
illness because you don't know what it really could be. So, based upon my interaction last year, I decided to launch Multiple Myeloma Matters this year.
Wonderful. Congratulations. That's exciting. I look forward to learning more about that. So make sure you pass along the information and I will help spread the awareness and message as well. So,
Much. I
yeah.
really appreciate that. I'm definitely going to need
Yes, you're very
it.
welcome. A wonderful cause. Keisha, I just want to piggyback on a lot of the information that you shared about clinical trials. And I think one thing that people are not aware of is that just because you enter into a clinical trial, it doesn't mean that you are stuck in that trial. You have the option to end it whenever you feel like it. And I think that's something that a lot of people need to be aware of as well, is that you don't have to do it from start to finish. Like if you say, hey, this is not for me, you have the option to bow out of it. I think that's very important for people to be aware of also.
That you get stuck in the clinical trials. We don't, listen, you're not stuck anywhere. You
That's
always
right.
have the ability to opt out or change your mind. Whatever treatment you're currently on, whether it's a clinical trial or the protocol treatment, right? But a lot of my friends and people I've come in contact with and over the past couple of years, not understand living with a critical illness, some say that they just want to go the holistic route versus Western medicine. It's entirely your choice.
That's
I
right.
believe in both. I think you should do Western medicine and some holistic. Watch what you eat. You know, like certain things you can do, but I'm not an advocate for just saying, I'm not taking medicine. I'm just not there with that. I'm just not. So I think everything is a personal preference. And I do encourage the person to be educated all the way around on whatever decision they want to make.
I
Like, and
agree.
definitely do not come to me with a bunch of YouTube videos. Like, you come with something science-based for me
The
to say,
data.
okay.
I get it. The data.
No, it's definitely we're in the age of information overload because
Oh,
information is
yes.
so readily available to us. But just make the best decision for yourself.
That's right.
That's what I encourage everyone to do.
Yes, make informed based decisions, not fear based decisions.
And emotional decisions,
That's
correct.
right. Yes. Keisha, let's talk now about your purpose. What does purpose mean to you? And I would like to know what was your purpose before your cancer diagnosis, and what is your purpose now?
So purpose means to me living true to your legacy and building your legacy that will last after you're gone. Like, what are people going to say about you, your kids, your friends, your families? How can you have an impact on the world in a positive way, right? Me sharing my journey with you today and with other people, how does that impact someone else who may be going through something similar or doesn't even realize 5 years from now they may be sitting where I'm sitting? And they can look back and say, you know what? I met Keisha at our convention, and this is what she said. So hold on to that hope because any diagnosis, especially cancer, is devastating. Like, no one wants to talk about the C word because it just makes you feel like it's over. You're not going to make it through. So that's living purposeful. Before being diagnosed with multiple myeloma, I was great. I had a corporate job. I was living the so-called American dream, living the status quo. I have a beautiful daughter. I was able to travel. I bought homes. Like, I went to school. I was doing everything I thought I was supposed to be doing at that time. And then after I got diagnosed, after, going through the initial shock and kind of figuring out where you want to be in the world, I realized like there was so much more I could have been doing even before I was diagnosed. And how we look for this comfort. And we often say to ourselves, I just want to get to a comfortable place. What does that mean, right? Does that mean I'm making enough money? I have the house that I want. Like, I just want to be comfortable. Like, just don't touch me now because I'm comfortable. Definitely. I was definitely one to be like that. I worked very hard in retail banking to get to where I was. Could have done more, of course. And then after diagnosis, I just wanted to, one, for my daughter to say, this happened to my mom, and this is what she did. She didn't lay on the couch. You know what I mean? She just didn't lay there, just wait to pass away. Like, I didn't do that. Like, I was just determined to build a business, build a brand. Leave my mark on my close friends, do whatever I can to help and encourage someone else. Because even outside of being diagnosed with cancer, other things, other life events happen. You get divorced, you have financial difficulty, loss of a parent. There's so many things that happens in our lifetime that we have to figure out how to navigate. Because if we don't, where does that leave you? Right. So even before cancer, there was things that happened in my 30s and my 40s and my 20s I could have handled better. And kind of, I think looking back, I think some of those things kind of like set me up for success dealing with this almost, because I always had the attitude of, okay, this happened. All right, let's just figure it out and move on. So some of the ways how I dealt with certain things, I think kind of prepared me for the ultimate blow of being diagnosed and how I
I agree with that. That is something that I share with my clients is, when you're really struggling, you get that diagnosis, reflect back on other times you had really tough challenges in your life. What tools, strategies, what did you use to navigate those challenges? So thank you so much for pointing that out. It's very important that you've been through hard things. You can do this too.
So when I opened up my first business, I coined this term, beyond fearless survivor. So I think for most people, they thought fearless is because, like I'm a woman, I'm a diva, but that's not what it was about. Because I live in constant fear of what's going to happen next month, next week, when I go take the next test. But I had to survive. So I coined the term fearless survivor. In my earlier interviews, that's what they called me, the fearless survivor. I kind of shift, I've been shifting from that name, but because I do more corporate training around complacency and helping teams and leaders come from complacency to inspired production and productivity, I kind of shied away from that. But that's how that term was coined, from living in fear. But you can't live in fear. It will paralyze you. So you have to
That's
survive
right.
it. So that's where that came about.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. Let's talk about your legacy and the different businesses that you've launched. As I mentioned when I was introducing you, you have launched several successful business ventures. Tell us more about that. I'm really intrigued. And I want to know more about how you really got into entrepreneurship. Was it a result of your cancer diagnosis? Did you always have that spirit in you prior to your diagnosis? I know you shared that you just really got into go mode, even more so with all the things you had been putting off. So just tell us more about your entrepreneurial journey.
Initially, I thought that I would wait until I retire from the financial institution or wherever I was going to retire from at 55 and then possibly go into real estate. That was always a dream of mine, to go into real estate, buy and sell homes, maybe buy a building. But then in 2016, when I got diagnosed, I was kind of like, oh, and then I may have to stop working. Oh, how was I going to support myself? So then I said, oh, I'm going to start a business. And I thought about something in the personal care world because that's what I love to do. That's what makes me feel good. If I don't feel well, I go get a facial, I go get a manicure. So something in the personal care world. I love to get my nails done, get facials and things of that nature. And then I said, oh, I'll open up a kids salon, Shining Star Kids Salon. I wanted it to be a place where young boys and girls could come and feel welcomed and be surrounded by positive words from the logo. It's like a girl with a curly afro and it has all these positive affirmations around it. And I launched that business in 2017 because I had a young child as well. Maddie was 8 at the time. So she can come get her hair done and she could also grow into the business. And I was
Nice.
trying to cater to other busy moms like myself. So we only went by appointments only, and that business has done well. It's still in existence today. Prior to the pandemic, we had 2 locations. And because of the pandemic and New York City being shut down, I just chose to consolidate to one just because at the time was a little bit uncertain. During the pandemic, I launched Survivante, which means survivor in French. It is a wellness brand. It's skincare, body care, and aromatherapy. And that's near and dear to me, because those are things that I do to kind of like calm myself down, have a couple of minutes of reflection. So Survivante was launched in 2021. During the course of that, I did own a business in Hudson Yards, which is prime real estate in New York City, called LaBella & Co. I was with a co-founder of a luxury brand, which did very well, but that has since have moved online, and then we dismantled the luxury gifting business. And then this year, I launched the Hixson Agency, which is my professional speaking business, where I go around, I speak to corporations, organizations and associations, women's groups about being complacent, how to recognize when you're in that comfort zone and kind of give them a wake-up call, are you really living the life that you want to live? Are you really doing the best you can? Like, what are you waiting for? Especially for women. I enjoy speaking to women the most because I think women are, we always are willing to compromise and put ourselves second, right? The family comes first, and our counterparts don't do that. They don't. Whatever they want to do, they find time, they make it happen. And women tend to be more accommodating and just kind of put off their dreams. So I really enjoy speaking to women because that's something, I mean, I'm a woman, also a mother, a professional. I had a long career in corporate America of how we kind of get stuck of always put things off, or I'm going to get to it next year. I'll wait till next spring. So I really enjoy connecting with women on that level to let them know, listen, you can spend 30 minutes every day to get to that goal. Like, start to lay the groundwork, do something. Because you just don't want to wake up one day and say you wasted all this time and you didn't get what you wanted out of life. What's going to be your legacy out of life? So that's what I really enjoy, though.
Wonderful, very
So,
inspirational.
thank
Thank
you.
you. In addition to all the things you've already done, what's next for you? Do you have any new projects coming up?
No, to expand my professional speaking business for sure, to go to different states, hopefully international. That is really what I am looking to spend what I call the second half of my life doing, running workshops and really working through my unique mechanism, which is called Limitless Legacy, creating your next, helping women just understand how to navigate their final destination. In spite of everything life has to comes your way, you know, you still have to work, take the kids to school, extracurricular activities, like all little bumps in the road, but really helping them navigate how to get to the ultimate with their purposes and not put it off.
Keisha, if the listeners are interested in connecting with you, learning more about your business ventures, connecting with you about multiple myeloma, hiring you for speaking, where can they find you?
So they can also log on to my website, keishahickson.com. They can book a call with me. Simply just type in book Keisha. Keisha, it will bring you to my calendar. Feel free to book an appointment. I would love to speak to anyone who has questions about multiple myeloma, who would like to book to speak with me, or just to learn more about me, how I navigate this disease. I'm here to offer any assistance that I can to anyone because we need each other. And
That's
we
right.
do learn from each other as well. Also, they can follow me at The Real Keisha Hickson on Instagram.
I will make sure to put your information in the listen notes for this episode so that people can easily find you. Keisha, as we wrap up, what is one I wish I would have known? It can be about anything, cancer, life, work, whatever.
Okay, what I wish I would have known, that complacency is really the anchor that stops your dreams from sailing. And that is my quote. When I look back on from the time I finished college to when I worked in corporate America, there's so many things that you have ideas that you just never follow through on because you feel like you don't have the time or it's not a good idea or somebody kind of talks you out of it. I'm just going to tell anyone who's listening, whatever idea you want to try, try it. The person who invented the Post-it didn't know it was going to be $1 billion company, okay? The Post-it. Like, now we can't even live without Post-its.
That's right.
Whatever idea you have, try your best to see it through. Go through the bumps in the roads. Even sometimes the initial idea turns into another idea.
That's true.
If you start to map it out, you'd be like, oh no, this is a better way. Just try it. Try it. We have nothing to lose.
Wonderful. It has been such a pleasure talking with you, Keisha. You are just full of positivity and inspiration. Is there anything else that you have not shared that you would like to share?
No, I think we covered it all. Thank you so
Wonderful.
much for your time.
Thank you so much, Keisha. It has been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for sharing your inspiration and wisdom. I look forward to the listeners getting the good energy that I'm getting. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Before we end today, I'd like to give a shout out to the listeners. Thank you so much for joining us. Please share, follow, or subscribe so that you can easily find this podcast and listen again. You can listen to Navigating Cancer Together on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast. If you're looking to expand your professional network, join me on LinkedIn. As an active member of the platform, I would like to personally invite you to connect with me. Let's grow our connections together. Just search for Talaya Dindi, BCPA. That's TalayaDendyBCPA. That is it for this Wednesday. And until next time, let's keep navigating cancer together. Take care. Thanks for listening to this episode of Navigating Cancer Together. I hope you found it helpful. Please be sure to subscribe, share, and tell your friends and family about it. For notes from the show and previous episodes, visit ontheotherside.life and check out the podcast section. I'd love it if you join me for the next episode. Talk to you soon.